It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear, no fear, no fear, just understanding. I don't know, kind of give you some concern, though. This is what I want to make sure that we, you know, discuss in this hour. How are we going to respond? You know, do we respond? Do we just wait, let it go, and survive? What we're looking at is, you know, a cycle that's been articulated by Meredith Whitney to where, you know, I don't know, find out wherever you want to start jumping on the wheel. They have foreclosures, and that gives lower real estate values. And then, of course, the government's concerned about the lower tax revenue. Then you got big, giant budget gaps in the state budget, and that goes down to the local municipalities and counties and such. You got tax increases that, of course, they're going to try and do in one way or another. They won't call it that, but it'll be fees and tickets, and the highwaymen for the king will be out there getting their goodies. Spending cuts. Then you got reduced consumption, you know, that's, you know, inevitable. Jobs will go away and then more foreclosures, and it's just a wheel. And there's no getting off of this wheel unless you remove, you know, some part of the wheel here. You know, take away the taxing and spending. Take away the budget gaps, and, you know, by doing away with the taxing and spending. You know, stop increasing property taxes and so on. You know, get rid of all the regulations and licensing and all this other stuff, and the business will flourish and you'll break the cycle. It's not how the bad guys think. They will let it go until it can't sustain itself anymore. And to keep you in line, they'll do whatever it takes. I mean, it'll get to where they'll start coming in with, oh, you know, here we go, the Patriot Act. The Patriot Act and internet kill switches. The devil is in the extensions. What they're doing is they're going to be extending the Patriot Act. And this is from integrity-legal.com. It's a lawyer page. And they're sharing some information here. In recent days, this blogger has been reading a great deal about both the proposed extension of the USA Patriot Act and the proposed internet kill switch, which would allow federal authorities to unilaterally shut down the internet services in much the same way that Egyptian authorities have restricted the access to internet services in Egypt. The first issue is the extension of the Patriot Act. Notwithstanding what appears to be broad popular support calling for the repeal or sunsetting of the Patriot Act, lawmakers on Capitol Hill continue to push for a further extension of this questionably constitutional piece of legislation. Then it goes on about Patrick Leahy's reintroduction of the legislation to keep extending this through December of 12. Why? Because they want the control. What happened to the Egypt's government when they shut down the internet? They lost any legitimate claim to represent rights or individuals or anything else. They're just a dictator. When they do that, you know, you're done. And what they want to do is we just want to have the capacity to do it. Okay. So what? So that you could do it if you think you need to? Yeah. And then when you do that, then you're done. In the eyes of the people, you're done. You want the capacity to be done? Seriously? That's what you're looking for? Absolutely. All right. So do we consider them having the ability or passing the legislation enough for Americans to understand that is when they lose their legitimacy? Is that it? I think the reason, biggest reason they turned back on today, the internet got turned on in, let me see if I got it up here. They have, here the internet got turned on for Egypt today. And you got to ask why. Why would they do that? And, you know, is it restore some credibility? I think that's done. I think it was irrelevant anymore because they came up with ways to get around it. The internet seems to be available again in Egypt after the country cut access, as LA Times, cut access to the web and cell phone networks for a week amid mass unrest, cell phones too. Good news, internet access being restored in Egypt, Google wrote on its official Twitter profile earlier this morning. After a long stretch of inactivity, RIPENCC, whatever that is, which tracks web traffic, recorded a sudden lurch in Egyptian internet use starting just after 11 a.m. in Cairo. A similar tracking organization, the Renesis Group, wrote in an official blog post that access was restored to websites such as Egyptian Stock Exchange, Commercial International Bank of Egypt, and the U.S. Embassy in Cairo. Well, your first question is, how did the U.S. Embassy in Cairo get turned off? And would the U.S. State Department allow themselves to be in a situation where they could be turned off? Yeah, I bet you they got alternative methods. But, you know, it just, you know, and there's a difference. It's all the same people doing the same thing. And whatever they learn from this, I don't know, point in history, you know, it's a crisis or not, but from this event is that we need to have more control. Now, I remember in 2003, when I was first started doing radio, Libya, the entire country of Libya, Gaddafi, was turned off. The fact that they were able to turn off an entire country right there, I'm going, oh, yeah, what does that tell you? Now they're saying, oh, no, you can never, internet, you can't. Anybody that knows anything about the internet, you know, not me, but people that I know, they said, of course. You know, there's communication nodes that you just flip switches, man, you're done. Well, they did it. Now, what Google did is they marketed a concept where you could dial a phone number. You dial this number, and you would leave a short message. It would do voice recognition, and it would post it on Twitter. Now, this voice recognition thing is getting, it's amazing. You know, I got my Droid right here, and it has a voice recognition technology right in it. Here, I'll show you. I go new text message. Now, there's a little microphone at the bottom left there. Now, I'm going to push that right there. Oop, got the wrong one. I push this little microphone, and what it does is it says, speak now, Ernest Hancock. Then it recognizes the voice pattern, and it puts it up there, or it's who you're going to email it to, and I've used this quite a few times. What you do is you just, you know, speak into it, and it types out a text message. I'm driving. I go, call Donna, tell her, ask her, be whatever, go place, get something. And boom, it's up. You hit send, go. Well, Google had this technology developed, and they're going, all right, we're good. You know, we bought up some little startup company that has this ability. So you would just use a regular voice modem, a telephone line, call in, leave your message, and it would go to your Twitter account. So there's always a way to get around it. In the mid-90s, we were talking about, we knew they were eventually going to do this kind of thing. So there was the ability to do this using ham radio waves, shortwave radio. You got around in your neighborhood, down the street from my old house here, there was a guy on the corner about seven houses down that had this big antenna, an older guy, been there forever. Ham radio. I go to him, hey, man, I need to transmit a data pack. So this is going to be, you know, which is why we're concerned about how we're going to set up Nebu, you know, as in Nebuchadnezzar jacking into the matrix. You know, do we need to have satellite communication? Do we want to be able to do internet? Well, of course, well, they shut that down. Ham radio? Be able to do fax machines somehow? What if you got a communication hub and you get in the thick of it and just a little RV over there and you're just transmitting? Will that get your RV riddled with machine gun fire? It's just now starting now. We'll talk about that, what's going on in Egypt, when we come back here in the next segment of Declare Your Independence, as they're trying to declare it, and somebody's trying to stop them. We'll talk about it when we come back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Hey, welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Let's hear what why they're protesting. I'll see if we can get a beat on this.
The protesters are demanding the ouster of President Hosni Mubarak and the opening up of a political system they feel has been rigged to benefit only the well-connected few. Although the country has experienced a healthy economic growth rate, millions of Egyptians have not benefited from the system, which they feel favors presidential cronies and political insiders. 40% of the population lives on less than $2 a day, while the political elite enjoy an opulent lifestyle. Protesters feel this will not change until Mubarak and his cronies are gone.
Well, are they right? Probably. So, now let's go ahead and, what else is going on? Let's go ahead and shut this off. How do we do this? But I want to play another video, too, on the same page and see if we can do that. Because the whole thing that I'm wanting to explain is that there is a base fundamental reason why this is happening. Let's see if we can get this.
Developing quickly right now. State television has ordered that all protesters leave the square. This is a final warning, and the protesters have been trapped in the square for most of the day as Mubarak's supporters have come in by the thousands and sealed off the four main corners of Tahrir Square. There are, according to hospital officials here, at least 400 injured. We've been watching ambulances streaming out. There have been running battles with Molotov cocktails. We've heard several bursts of gunfire. What happens next, however, why the Egyptian state television is warning people to leave. There is an expectation that there could be some sort of final confrontation, either the troops moving in or the pro-Mubarak supporters making a big push to the center of the square.
Richard, this may be wishful thinking, but I was talking to a senior official who was saying that they believe there is a distinction to be made between the armed forces and the security forces loyal to Mubarak, who precipitated, they believe, these attacks on the unarmed protesters today. Do you think that is a reasonable distinction that can be made, that the army is still acting responsibly, and that the government itself, those still loyal to Mubarak, are acting on their own, or is that a distinction without a difference?
It seems almost implausible to think that the government was not behind sending these several thousand. I would say there were probably 10 to 15,000 pro-government supporters who arrived simultaneously carrying very similar, carrying similar kind of banners, carrying weapons on horseback. This was orchestrated to make a distinction that these weren't the uniformed armed forces. Instead, they were some sort of militia, I think is probably not an accurate distinction. It is certainly not the way it is seen here. This is seen as an orchestrated move by the government, a crackdown against these protesters, but only by other means. Instead of using the army and using overt forces, they are sending in plainclothes, perhaps policemen, plainclothes thugs who many supporters believe are loyal to the government. And behind me, you could hear some, there are occasional bursts of gunfire, a lot of them coming from the area, the main choke point, which is the primary entrance to Tahrir Square. We have also spoken to the demonstrators. They have thinned out considerably. There are only perhaps a few thousand of them, which is still a large number, trapped in the center of Tahrir Square, and according to their organizers, they will not leave under any circumstances. They will not disperse. One of the leaders said they will die in Tahrir Square, and if they die, more people will come and try and retake back this center of Cairo tomorrow.
Richard Engel, thank you. I know you're going to be reporting all day. You know better than I, the first order of business is to stay safe.
Wow. This is, you know what I noticed is that the woman that was doing that reporting, I think I recognize her. I want to bring something up that a lot of people don't know. Let me go ahead and do this. Tomorrow on my schedule here, I got John Lott. He does a lot on Fox News. He's going to be on the show tomorrow. That's going to be interesting. Friday, we have Jordan Page's new album is out, and he just had a daughter. And he's got two little boys, and he had a daughter, so he's really happy. and Professor Joshua Stacher. Now, they're going to be, let's see, what is the issue on that? I think, you know, Sierra was to get us some information on Egypt. Let's see what he's going to be talking about. Yep, he's one of the best Egypt experts in the U.S. He's going to be talking about a lot of stuff that I want to talk about, so we'll be doing that. Now, what I'm going to do is I want to look for something. Let's do this one. I'm going to go wife of Greenspan. This was something that 4409 brought to my attention. I had no idea. Yep. You know, you can't make this stuff up. Take a look at this. You'll look at this picture. The woman that was talking to this guy in Egypt is Alan Greenspan, former head of the Federal Reserve's wife. I didn't believe him when he told me. I go, no, no way. And they go, yep. You know, on Politico, the page where this is at, it says, let's see, NBC News President Steve Capus today dismissed a recent Columbia Journalism Review piece as overly simplistic for calling into question whether Andrea Mitchell, wife of Alan Greenspan, was too conflicted in covering the financial mess. To me, it's a pretty easy balancing act, Mr. Capus told the Times. She knows where to draw the line. This whole thing is a manifestation of central banking, of inflation, of economic controls. That's what this whole thing is about. And to have her covering this and being Greenspan's wife, doesn't it make you go, I didn't know this. Did you know? I mean, you think I should know this. You think everybody should know this. MSNBC, you know, the liberal side, right? Wife of Alan Greenspan is one of the prime reporters, and she's sitting on the anchor desk on that particular story. You can't make this stuff up. You just can't make it up. And I want to understand how it's going to manifest itself here for my grandchildren and my children. Last night we had a nice evening. You know, it's getting really cold and everything. You know, and we had our grandkids over. My daughter-in-law's mother had an ailment. They needed to go spend time with her. They dropped off the kids, and we got to do the first evening in our new house with the children. You know, giving baths to the two babies, and we're just having a good old time and so on. And there's this cloud over my head, because when you turn on the computer, Kaylee, the 1.5-year-old, she likes to dance. Yeehaw, man, we'd be dancing. Well, you know, we go on the internet, and we'll bring up some good dance stuff, you know, some, you know, Michael Jackson stuff, or, you know, Thriller or Beat It or something like that. She likes that kind of beat. And as you turn on the computer, well, of course, the homepage is Freedom's Phoenix. Every time I go to Freedom's Phoenix, we have great contributors that put a lot of good stuff up there. And how can you not be affected by the knowledge when you know stuff from history and you see the progression? The only thing that we can do is prepare for what's coming. And I tell you the big thing, get food. That's it. I know, and after you got that, then you might want to stock up on some silver and ammo and guns or something. You know, because when you get to the streets, are you going to need to take guns? Egypt has plenty of guns, but they're not using them. How's this going to end?
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, where it's nice and chilly. Oh, it got down to freezing last night. Yeah, below freezing, you know, little water features and so on. Started freezing over. I mean, freezing. Cold, 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 dead plants. Yep. It got cold here, too. Global warming. And you ask anybody, environmental movement, they'll say, yeah, of course it got cold. It's part of the global warming thing. Whatever. Well, they're going to change it to climate change, and then they'll be able to, you know, whatever happens, they're going to, if it's not perfect Hawaii weather, they're going to blame it on something. Now, I want to play this one part. It's Dr. Paul and Neil Cavuto a couple days ago. And he's on Fox and he's saying, all right, we got to get the perspective from Dr. Ron Paul, on what's going on in Egypt. You know, he was screaming about foreign policy all this time. And what has he got? How many times has he got to say it? How many ways has he got to say it? He just keeps saying it. It's like, look, you freaking stupid morons. What'd you think was going to happen? Well, for decades, you socially and economically engineer these people. What'd you think was going to happen? And to think that somehow here in the United States we're immune is just stinking thinking from the beginning, too. Let's go ahead and see and listen to what Dr. Paul had to say.
Mess, it's getting messier. And reason enough for Texas Republican Ron Paul to say the U.S. should stop getting in deeper and cut all financial aid to Egypt now. Congressman joins me on the phone. Well, that would be a big move, Congressman.
Well, it would, but I'd include everybody because I think we just get ourselves into too much trouble. This is a typical example of what happens when we run an interventions-type foreign policy. We get in the middle of these fights. But we've been in the middle of this for 30 years over there. We've given Mubarak $60 billion, and so we're responsible for a lot of the mess that's over there.
What if we did indeed pull out or stop giving him money? The argument is someone else comes in to our detriment. What do you say?
Well, that may be, but you don't know whether it will be to our detriment. Somebody else is going to come in. The big fight now is for us to be in charge. I mean, if Mubarak survives, we want to be on his side. If they get a new guy, we want to be on their side. So, and I just think that doesn't work because eventually the people rebel. For a while, it seems to be stable, but it's so artificial. I mean, all that money going over there, they have a 450,000-man army that will probably be turned against the people unless they take over the government. And there's a lot of wealth there for a few people, and the people are suffering. It just sets the stage for this. They should be forced to live within their means and take care of themselves. But I would do that with all countries. I wouldn't just cut off Egyptian aid. I'd cut off all aid from the Middle East, and maybe that whole area would be better off for it.
Well, the argument against doing that, Congressman, you've heard this so many times, is that in this case, the Muslim Brotherhood, through groups like Al-Qaeda and the rest, would get enormous influence in the region, a region rich in oil, and we'd be having to kowtow to them. What do you say?
Yeah, that is the argument, but they ever thought whether the growth of groups like this is because they have a target, and the target is us, is our puppet governments. I mean, we didn't have to worry about radical mullahs in Iran until we put the Shah in. And then it took a couple of decades, and finally the people rebelled, and there was a revolution, and there was a blowback to us and an unintended consequence. So, yes, I think we have to worry about the radicals, but we have to understand how they get their motivation. And their motivation is how they arouse the people and radicalize them is when we take over. I mean, I think the big issue here is how long is it going to take for this to happen in Saudi Arabia? And for people to say that's impossible, I think they're kidding themselves. Now, that would be big news, and that would be major. And maybe that's why some people are discounting that. And I think oil went up, $6 or $7 in the last trading day. So there's something significant going on. There's a lot of concern there.
On the fear of just that. You're right, Congressman. Thank you very much. Good having you.
Yeah. Is this what he was talking about in 08? Blowback? You just keep socially and economically engineering everybody. They don't like it. And WikiLeaks starts coming out saying that's exactly what we were doing. They knew it. Then you have that coupled with a diminishing lifestyle. And what was the one report? 40% of the people live on a couple dollars a day. You have the progressives that scream in social justice and we got to, take from the wealthy and redistribute so everybody's living on $6 a day. Is that the solution? It's like I just want to bang my head. Well, that's what I do against this microphone, against the keyboards on Freedom's Phoenix, and try and create a structure by which we can understand from many varying perspectives what's going on. Yesterday I had the Zeitgeist on, and after the show, we had the first hour was Charles Goyette. Charles Goyette and I, we've been predicting this for a long time. We've been screaming this. He wrote his book, The Dollar Meltdown, and went New York Times bestseller, translated into Chinese, Korean. I just found Indonesian, where the heck that language is. And it was just an understanding of fundamental basic Austrian economic duh stuff. Duh. Giving homage to human, you know, interactions, just human nature. You know, it's just the way we react to different things. You know, we, you know, maximize the pleasure, minimize the pain, you know, and you just got to make sure that people understand that pain always comes when your pleasure is at the expense of someone else. Sooner or later, you know, the resentment builds up. Sooner or later, the education gets to a point where they understand where the source is of their poor condition, and they rebel. They always have. They who? The people. So if you know this is coming, you start looking for signs. Well, the biggest sign that you can see, of course, is the man, the central authority, preparing for it. Here comes, you know, false flag operations to justify things like Patriot Act. Here you have, you know, whether they're false or not, doesn't even matter. They'll take advantage of, like Rahm Emanuel says, you don't let a good crisis go to waste. And what does he mean by that? You know, go to waste to provide people more freedom? You know, when you get a report saying that an armed society becomes more peaceful, do you give more gun freedoms? No, you wait until somebody gets shot and then you want to take them away. That tells you what direction they're going. Things like the Second Amendment is just a Vulcan mind meld, as L. Neil Smith would put it, into the mind of the statist. They do not want you to be able to dissent, to resist. I'm interested in how peaceful this revolution was going on in Cairo. Now, the government is saying there, they're going, no, everybody's got clear. Everybody out of here. One way that they did this, they brought in thousands of pro-Mubarak, you know, on the horseback military guys, just go in there, and they're perfectly willing to be bashing somebody on the head with a baton. They're perfectly willing to be shooting people. They're perfectly willing to be dropping Molotov cocktails, firebombs on the crowds from the sides of the buildings. They're perfectly willing to initiate violence. What do the people do? Do they retaliate? Do they respond? Are they capable of it? Do they want to? Well, there are thousands of people in the center square where they're saying, no, we're not going to go voluntarily. We'll martyr ourselves, you know, bring it on. Where are they going to go? What life do they have waiting for them? What are their options? What do they see as a future for them and their children? So they're there waiting to die. I saw this before. I'm old enough to see this kind of thing happen. What is it, 20, 25 years since Tiananmen Square? And how were they communicating then? Fax machine. People just, you know, flying out with, you know, papers. Getting the information out, dictating over the phone. The information got out. The scenes got, the photos got out. This is going to get out sooner or later, exactly what's happened. There'll be the documentary, the book. And I'll tell you, in the Muslim world, the United States will not be seen as the good guys. It's going to get worse. And as the economy and the dollar goes, it's going to come home. Are you ready? And how will you respond? And what can we learn from this instance? We'll talk about that when we come back.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Yeah, one solution, worldwide revolution. That's what's going on. I want to share something with you so that you know what's going on. It's been going on for years, and it's coming to a head. You know, a lot of people wonder how it is that, you know, God, Ernie, man, how you got so many things? Because we just continually keep putting branding irons in the fire. When they're nice and hot and you got the issue needs to be branded, well, you pull it out and you brand it, you know, and then you put it back in. You got a bunch of other, you know, and you just keep doing that and you get a bunch of brandings. So it's we stay busy. I'll segue from this issue into what's going to happen as people start taking to the streets, because do you do so armed? Now, all the protests that we do here in Arizona for years, for decades, we do so armed. Now, we make sure everybody, we're armed. Just going around and starting Billy Clubbing people and being stupid and doing whatever, we're armed. But it's more than that. It's also the agent provocateurs. They're the guys wearing the bandana, wearing the army boots or the police issue, whatever. And you'll be at the airport. And I warned the guys from the Phoenix police. I said, look, I know what's going to happen. There'll be some guy at the Sky Harbor Airport, do something stupid, gets behind the police lines. And all of a sudden he slips out with some, employee only access door. I go, do not think that we're not going to have 50 gazillion cameras on this. Will this happen? Of course it will, if you let them. So this is one thing that, do we want to be armed with firearms? That's an individual thing. I definitely encourage you making sure you got a phone. A camera. And you're doing the quick and it goes up on your Twitter and, boom, done. Will that help us? Will it make a difference? I don't know. But as we're seeing in the central square in Cairo, that sooner or later, it's going to come down to bloodshed. Sooner or later, it's going to come down to, we won't go, oh yeah, you will. Sooner or later. And that's where we're at now. Now, yeah, John Bolton, former ambassador of the United Nations, Mr. Walrus Mustache guy under, Bush administration, whatever, doesn't matter. He was up there saying, look, man, they got to take charge. He's on Fox News, go get him. For whatever it freaking takes, you'll get the peoples in line. In anticipation of this and the economics and the economy, we knew it's going to take a precious metal-based economy, something that will retain its value. Now, how we were able to do that is Senator Karen Johnson in 2007, right when the Ron Paul thing just got started, she was the co-chair for Ron Paul's Arizona effort. Now, we introduced her to some of the people from the Ron Paul thing, thought they were kind of the same mind here. This is the people that you need. Now, she was concerned about the Amaro coming, and I'm like, look, they're going straight to the world, though, man. This is not, and that's a distraction. So what we did is Pal Gamble, senior editor, and I, she asked us to come in and talk to her about what we could do, and we came up with this idea, Arizona Centennial coming up. Now, she just sent me an email saying she's communicating with a representative from the Secretary of State now. They're getting ready to mint it. Now, part of the process is they had to, approve the design that's on the front and approve the design that's on the back of the medallion. It's 1 ounce gold. Or they're going, oh, we only got $70,000-something. Heck, that would be like, 50, 60 of these medallions, and we want to make more for our buddies. And it said to supply all public demand. Well, you just put it up, say we're doing this. People give you the money to do it. You charge up to 10% over, cost. No more than 10% was in the legislation. It could be a moneymaker. And you got your alternative currency right there. Arizona's printing its own gold or minting it. I go, so what's the problem? I knew this would happen. At every stage of this legislation, they'd send it back to the senator. She'd call us down. Pal and I go down and sit there. Every single time, they did exactly what we were anticipating that they would do. It was two things. One, we put medallions to be minted up to 1 ounce, 9.999 gold. We wanted the plural medallion so it could be in various denominations if they wanted to. They said, up to 1 ounce, but you could have half ounce, 10th ounce, quarter ounce, whatever the heck you want to do. So we put medallions, plural, and in quantity to sufficiently supply public demand. So we're going, we want it, as much as I want to buy, I can order it, you get it, you do it, I got it. What, you want to put limits on it? Because what they were thinking, a lot of the commemoration committee of the century of Arizona being a state, they were thinking, oh yeah, we want to do these so we can give them to our buddies, like this corporation head and this CEO and this Politico and because we love this guy or some, Chotsky thing. I'm like, what? No, hell no. This is a moneymaker. This is a, represents our mining and it represents, real money. So we knew that if you had the word gold in there, it was going to be seen by the, the big bad CIA embedded somewhere Geneva people. Absolutely. They kept taking out the supply, to meet public demand and the plural medallions for different denominations. We kept having them put it back in. Legislative Council, put it back in, put it back in, put it back in. Senator Karen John, look, put it back in. I said, man, you got to get on their ass. You got to say, look, we know what you're doing. Put it back in. Even after it would be voted on the floor, the language that they would print or put on the internet of what passed wouldn't have that in there. Because they can. They just make this stuff up. They just change it as they want to. So she sent it to me, and she goes, hi, Ernie, I plagiarized some of your wording as I sent the answer back to Jim Drake from Arizona Secretary of State. See below, just wanted you to see what I said to him. I will let you know what I get back. Thanks for your help. Now, this was just yesterday. Now, what she sent him was part of, you know, what my comment was on the changes that they wanted to do with the legislation. And this is what I said. No, they wanted to put, but may be limited. See, it said manufacturing quantities shall be produced to meet ongoing public demand, but they wanted to change this to add this text. But may be limited because of the cost of the gold, silver, or copper. What the hell does that mean? Limited because of the, based on what? People are giving you money to go do it. It's not, what, no, the limit is how many people want it. Why would they do this? So I wrote her back. I said, no limits. Why would they want limits? Only to limit supply to people that would pay whatever anyway. I mean, that's the limit. This was always a key part of the law, and they keep trying to take it out because someone knows what it means. Find out who, what is pushing limits on production, and you'll find a trail back to the bad guys. So she wrote him back with something very similar. No limits. Why would we want limits? Only limit supply to people that would pay whatever anyway. This particular part was always key part of the law, and some keep trying to take it out. Jim, who, what is pushing limits on production? We definitely need to produce the minted coins as the demand calls for them. I also favor the idea of prepaid orders. That would allow us to mint more coins than we could with a budget of only $78,000. Thanks for your work on the project. I really appreciate it. Karen Johnson, Senator retired. Now, this is, I want to make sure you guys understand that we anticipated this years ago. I knew it was coming. They, them, those won't leave us alone. There is an entity that is at work in every state legislature. Do not allow the states to mint their own medallions, coins, money, whatever. John Birch Society representative from Utah talked to me Saturday at the Nullify Now, the 10th Amendment Center function they had here in Phoenix. And they're introducing legislation to do the same kind of thing. And they'll run up against the same thing. One, do they really understand what to do? They're always about negotiating and stuff. You know, that's what I hate about this, is it takes a hardcore libertarian that knows better that says, look, you know, you can do whatever denomination and no limit. People want to buy it, you do it. Well, we got limits because of what? Why? Who is doing this? I didn't anticipate that it would pass in 07. I was amazed that it went through. I'm more amazed that it, you know, actually happened. But what I knew to watch for was they wanted to limit it to just as many as they wanted to do, and they make money and give to their buddies or something. But it actually become popular circulation with the people in Arizona and around the world, Arizona minting their own gold. You know, you think they would be popular? Hell yeah. You think they want it to be popular? Hell no. Why? And who's doing it? I start pulling that thread, I'm going to find out who's behind this. Because I anticipated that getting this resistance when it was started. And we kept getting them to change it. We wanted, finally they let it go through. All right, it's on the books. I'm going to pull this thread. Of anything else that I do, I pull this thread, it's going to go right back to the bad guys. I guarantee it. They take me out because of this stuff. WalletVoting.com. See you tomorrow.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what Readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. Readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears has already matured.